what God does in the midst of the symbol of communion. So here we have some marshmallows. I'm going to ask you to hold on to them. Now, maybe some of you try, you know, this might not be hard for some of you. Some of you might find it incredibly difficult to hold on to these, this marshmallow, because you love marshmallows. If you're like me, you love marshmallows. But I want to guarantee you, if you wait patiently without eating the marshmallow through this, let's say, half-hour sermon, okay? I'll put 30 minutes on it. Now, some of you are going to time me right away, Stuart. But there we go. We're good. I'll say 30 minutes, okay? And if I go a little bit longer, be patient, okay? Because we're learning how to be patient today. And it will be worth it hanging on to that marshmallow. I want to tell you that. James is talking about being patient. I'm going to read the scripture for you, and then we'll go from there. How to be patient. James chapter 5, verse 7 to 12. Dear brothers and sisters, be patient as you wait for the Lord's return. Consider the farmers who patiently wait for the rains in the fall and in the spring. They eagerly look for the valuable harvest to ripen. You too must be patient. Take courage, for the coming of the Lord is near. Don't grumble about each other, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. For look, the judge is standing at the door. For examples of patience and suffering, dear brothers and sisters, look at the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We give great honor to those who endure under suffering. For instance, you know about Job, a man of great endurance. You can see how the Lord was kind to him at the end. For the Lord is full of tenderness and mercy. But most of all, my brothers and sisters, never take an oath by heaven or earth or anything else. Just say a simple yes or no, so that you will not sin and be condemned. All right. So we have a theme that runs through this passage. Some of the verses might seem a little random in there, like the last one I read. But it's talking about patience. And I came across some great quotes about patience. All of us can laugh about patience, and sometimes we wonder, you know, sometimes this is a virtue that sometimes we kind of go, well, I'm just an impatient person. It's just the way I am. I want immediate results. And sometimes that can even be, sometimes, in some regards, enviable in our society. I want things and I want it right now. Patience, Barbara Johnson says, some of these quotes are witty and humorous, some are insightful. Patience is the ability to idle your motor when you feel like stripping your gears. That's what I thought I would give one. Lyman Abbott said, patience is passion tamed. Eknath Eswarnar, patience can't be acquired overnight. It's like building up a muscle. Every day you need to work on it. Bill McGlashan, patience is something you admire in the driver behind you, but not in the one ahead. Have you felt that sometimes with the signal lights being down? A Greek proverb, 1 minute of patience, 10 years of peace. Think about the Greek wars. Jean-Jacques Rousseau, patience is bitter, but its fruit is sweet. Edward Bulwer-Lytton, patience is not passive. On the contrary, it is active. It is concentrated strength. And I like this one. This one. I'll pray for patience, because if I pray for strength, I may throw you out the window. Any of you as parents felt that? All commend patience, but none can endure to suffer. Margaret Thatcher, I am extraordinarily patient, provided I get my own way in the end. And then Wayne Dyer says, infinite patience brings immediate results. We want to talk about patience and the benefit of patience and what we might be facing in our lives right now that might require us to be patient. There are the little kind of things in life, the little irksome things, the little uncomfortable or inconvenient things that can cause us to be impatient. There's also kind of the bigger picture of patience on the grand scale. Am I willing to wait for something better to come along? Now, getting back to your marshmallow, I want to say to you, it'll be worth it if you hold on to that marshmallow, if you patiently wait to eat it. In the 1960s, a Stanford professor named Walter Mischel began conducting a series of important psychological studies. He did some experiments where he took 4- and 5-year-olds, and he put them in a room. Some of you have heard of this experiment before. It's quite well known. And he put them in a room, and he sat them in front of a table, and he put a marshmallow in front of them, 4- and 5-year-olds. And he said, well, you can eat this marshmallow now, or I'm going to go away, and when I come back, if you haven't eaten it, you'll get a second marshmallow. So the choice was simple. Eat it now, enjoy it now, or wait and then you'll get a second one. You'll get two to enjoy. And then they went out and they had a camera set up and everything, and they watched it through watched these kids through a one-way window, and it was quite humorous. So some kids, you know, started bouncing, started getting, you know, they're trying to control themselves. Some of them poked at it. Some of them started moving it around. Some of them just went and just ate it right away. Others waited some time, but they waited 15 minutes, and then they came back, and sure enough, they gave them a marshmallow. And they tabulated this all, and they took the names, and then over the next 40 years, and this was very interesting, they tracked the people, the kids that had taken that experiment, to see what their kind of life looked like afterwards. Now, I know this is simplistic, and you can take things and put them all into a little petri dish, and, you know, we know life is a lot more complicated than that. But it was very interesting what they found. They found that as the years came about, as the years rolled on, the children grew up and researchers conducted follow-up studies and tracked each child's progress in a number of areas. What they found was surprising. The children who were patient and waited to receive the second marshmallow ended up having higher SAT scores, lower levels of substance abuse, lower likelihood of obesity, better response to stress, better social skills as reported by their parents, and generally better scores in range of other life measures. Interesting. Now, I know that life is a lot more complicated than that. And you might look at it and go, well, you know, are we just predetermined? Are we just like whatever you are when you're four, that's just what you're going to be like? Well, it's interesting. They did another research deal at the University of Rochester, and they put an interesting twist on it. Instead of taking marshmallows, the researchers split the children into two groups. The first group was exposed to a series of unreliable experiences. For example, the researcher would give the child a small box of crayons and promise to bring a bigger one, but never did. The researcher gave a child a small sticker and promised to bring a better selection of stickers, but never did. Meanwhile, the second group had very reliable experiences. They were promised better crayons and got them. They were told they would get better stickers, and they received them. And then they started studying these groups as well. And similarly to the other ones, the ones who had the unreliable experiences, they were much more likely to have challenges along the way in their life. A pattern was sort of created. Two things registered in the brains of the children. One was, patience is worth it. And second, I have the capability to wait. Now, we know that these are, you know, this is just a small microcosm. This is just a small kind of a picture. But James is taking that same kind of track and saying, trust God. He is reliable. He won't let you down. If you're patient and wait on him and live in obedience to him and follow his ways, you will experience that it's worth it. It's worth it on a deep level of joy and contentment. It's worth it on the level of what God's blessings might come into your life as well. And ultimately, as Jenny was just talking about, we know that the hope that we have is based on something solid. It's not just wishful thinking. It's not based on a bunch of unreliable kind of data, but it's based on the truth that God says, someday I'm going to come and I'm going to make all things right. And so James here is talking to a group of people who are going through a very difficult time. Kevin talked last week about some of the circumstances that they were facing. There's a whole group of people who are Christ followers, but they were under the oppression of the rich. It was a very unjust system that was going on. There were a lot of other circumstances that were going on in their lives, and James is saying, I want to remind you, I want to give you some examples of patience so that you'll continue to hang in there with God, that you will keep following him, that you will keep going. It was interesting, this last week I opened up the devotional that many of you are following called Jesus Calling, which we make available here on the book. And on Wednesday, the verse that was there was John 16, verse 33. And it says, in this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, have courage. I have overcome the world. God is saying, I'm here with you, I'm for you, and I, in you and through you, will overcome whatever it is that you might be going through. So James here gives us three examples, and I'm going to add a fourth one on, which comes from one of the verses here, about what we can learn from when it comes to patience. And so James starts off by pointing us in the way of a farmer. Now, not a lot of us have a ton of experience in farming. I know I don't. But if you want to look for patience, you have to look at what it takes to be a farmer. And he does appeal to something that is very familiar to all of us, and that is the idea of patiently waiting for the rains to fall. Have we not learned that a little bit this summer? Usually we don't have to be that patient about rain in our climate. Like, it just comes. But this summer, we didn't have rain. And I know many of us are going, oh, man, we just need it, right? The forest fires, the lawns, the trees. We can see kind of some of the distress that the plants and the trees are under because of the lack of rain. Now, most of us aren't connected to that fact when it comes to farming. But when you think about it, a whole lot of people that James was talking to were very connected to that. They recognized that if we didn't get the spring rains when we plant the seed to, first of all, germinate it, and then the fall rains when we plant it, and spring when it's growing its fruit, we're not going to have a harvest. And there's a lot at stake for those farmers. And they just have to patiently wait and go, okay, God, we're just waiting for you to come with the rain. And in the Middle East, when it's just a very dry and dusty place, much like what we've gone through, where you go through months without rain, this is typical. And these farmers would have to just wait and say, okay, I know it's going to come. God, you are going to faithfully bring us the rains again. We don't have all of those. A lot of us, we just go to the grocery store, right? We don't really have to think about our food. Come to think of it, though, I went to the grocery store this morning, and when there's no power, there's no grocery store open. And, you know, we recognize how dependent we are on power. What we are to power is what the farmers were to rain back then. I kind of took my first run at farming this summer, at least the first one in my adult life. As a kid, my parents had big gardens, and it was almost like farming, and they'd have us out there weeding, and it wasn't the most pleasant thing that I liked doing, so I don't know. And somehow the benefits of eating the harvest of the garden back then didn't really register for me. But now all of a sudden, you know, 26 years into our married life, I decided that, well, and Suzanne picked this up, was she picked up some little tomato plants. And so with this kind of summer, I got to show you. I mean, here I am. I'm just going to brag about what a great farmer I am. Okay, and the slide is kind of sideways. But do you see how many tomatoes are in there? Like, I'm very, very proud of that. We've actually had some red ones come off of there, some ripe ones. That's what they're called, right? When you farm and they're ripe and they're red. And it's like biting into an apple. They are so incredible. I know I've probably got them tied up wrong, and I'm doing it all wrong, I'm sure. And some of it's laying on the ground and stuff. But all I had to do, and farming wasn't that difficult for me, is just make sure I put a hose on it every day, right? Just put some water on it. We're allowed to do that. Not sprinkle, but we're, yeah. Not turn on the sprinkler. There's an incredible amount of gratification when you receive the reward, the fruit of what you've been doing, what you've been waiting patiently through. And James is using that analogy, and he's saying, in the same way, as you live out your life, your good deeds, the life that God has called you to do, as you work hard at it, because farmers work hard. One thing is true is farmers work hard. As you hope and wait that God is going to do something through that, the fruit will come. God will do that. There's going to be a fruit in your own life. The fruits of the Spirit are going to grow, and the fruit of in others' lives are going to grow as well. And sometimes you may not see it, but he's saying, be patient. Keep at it. Like a farmer who sometimes sees the seed, it's all, everything's happening underground. You don't know what's going on, but eventually you receive a harvest. He's saying, hang in there. A farmer that was a volunteer for our youth ministry when I was in high school in Saskatchewan was a guy that I really looked up to. And I think about the fruit of his example in my life now. He was a young dad at the time who just hung out with us kids, just seemed to enjoy us. I remember he had his own private plane, and he took me up on his plane and let me fly at one time, and just took an interest in us as guys. And he had this remarkable, hopeful spirit about his life. And while other farmers like him were complaining and not sure whether the rains were going to come and there was all that sort of talk, I always noticed he was always like hopeful. He was always like, oh, it's going to work out. It's going to work out. And that was really an example to me. But probably what was most an example to me was watching him go through some very difficult times. He had two kids. He had a little guy, cutest little guy. We used to go dirt biking together. I was 15. He was 8. He got leukemia, and he passed away. And then a few years later, his wife got cancer, and she passed away. And I get broke up just thinking about it. But it was just the hardest thing to watch, and it was difficult. And he was real, and he was honest, and he asked God questions. But he continued to hope. And the kind of character that he had when it came to crops was what he exemplified in his life when it came to the reality of the disappointments that come in, the circumstances that come in our lives. And I think about that, and he might never know that. I haven't seen him for 20 years. I should probably send him a note and thank him. But I think there's some fruit that he probably wouldn't know about that's actually come about, you know, in my life, as I've seen that in his life. So what James is encouraging these people to do is he's encouraging them to never give up, to keep doing that trust thing, to walk in trust with God, to work hard in this world, to use your gifts, to be in ministry, to not just step away and go, oh, well, nobody will notice the difference, or it's not going to make any difference. It doesn't seem to be making any difference. I'm not seeing any difference. And we sit back and we go, okay, I'll just throw it in. Or maybe it's that relationship that's been very, very difficult, or that situation where you've seen and you've been praying and you seem to be giving of yourself and nothing seems to be getting back. James says, hang in there, like a farmer, wait. God is working out his fruit. He's working out the harvest in your life, and it's valuable. It's good what he's doing. Eating the marshmallow, eating it right now, would be the equivalent of, well, you know what, I'm just going to back away. I'm not going to keep doing the work that God's called me to do. Galatians 6 verse 9 says, do not weary in doing good, for at the proper time you will reap a harvest if you do not give up. So James uses the illustration of a farmer. And then he goes on in verse 9, and he throws out a verse that initially you go, that just seems so random. He goes, don't grumble about each other, brothers and sisters, or you'll be judged. You go, okay, he's just talking about patience, and he's going back to patience again. But when you think about it, when circumstances are difficult, when it's challenging, sometimes that's the easiest time to begin to grumble, to lose unity. And he's going, brothers and sisters, he's talking to the church, he's talking to people working together, he's saying, I want you to continue to be with and for each other. You might be tempted to eat the marshmallow, to criticize another person, to say something negative towards them, to start kind of grumbling against others. But this is a long journey. This is a spiritual journey that's for life. Hang together. Don't grumble against each other. I think of road trips. Some of you may have gone on road trips. The challenge of being in a minivan together as a family on a road trip, or with another friend. I think we can all think of times when we've gone on a road trip and gone, oh man, you know, when it gets hot out, or when it's like we've been in this car forever. I was sitting down with Mike Ross, our church planting pastor at Real Life, and we meet pretty regularly. We met for lunch this last week, and he was telling me about his road trip that he took last week, in last 2 weeks. And they took their, you know, big green minivan. No, it's like a Westie kind of a thing. And they're pulling a trailer. And he's got four kids, 7 years and younger. I think his youngest is like 6 months old. Okay, four boys, okay? And they're bouncing around in the trailer. It was just hilarious to hear him talk about the chaos that was going on in his Westphalia as, you know, cars are honking and getting, you know, upset as they're driving through the interior because they're going 10 miles underneath the speed limit. And, you know, their six-month-old is just teething and he's just gnashing his teeth and, you know, screaming back there. And mom's kind of got the seatbelt on and saying, okay, to one of the boys, now just, you know, pat his stomach. No, no, no. Okay, pat his head. No, you know, and you try and do that. Some of you guys remember that. That's a while ago for us, but I do have a memory from a few years ago, and I checked this out with Juliana before I share it here, because it's funny. We were driving a few years ago from Seattle over towards Yellowstone, and we drove through the night. And you know those difficult hours in the morning, like 2, 3 in the morning, and Austin and I have kind of taken upon ourselves, my son and I, to be the drivers. You know, Suzanne and the girls are all sleeping in the back. And, you know, you're just trying to get through that night and keep each other awake. And all of a sudden, Juliana wakes up and she goes, oh, my stomach is hurting. Like, it just doesn't feel good. And we're like, I'm sure it's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, she's sitting there, oh, give me something. I need something. I feel so sick. Can you pull over? Going, no, no. I'm sure you're going to be fine. Just, you know, let it ride kind of thing. And she's got Austin's pillow on her stomach there, and she's doubled over. And we're just saying, you know, just suck it up, okay? Like, we're working hard here. We're trying to keep the van going towards Yellowstone. Don't bother us. And all of a sudden you hear it, right? Just the woof. She does an amazing thing. She opens up his pillow like this, just fills it with barf, and he goes, "See, I was sick. You didn't have to prove it to us." But we were grumbling against each other. I mean, the amazing thing is, for all of you as parents who know what a van can smell like after you've had barf, like, it was amazing. We just threw it in a garbage bag, tied it up, threw it in the next dumpster. No problem, no mess, no nothing. So way to go, Juliana. That was awesome. But you know what it's like when you're on a road trip together and it's getting long. And sometimes James recognizes that for these Christians and for all of us, being in this spiritual journey together, sometimes it feels long. It feels like you've been in this for a long time. And he's saying, don't grumble against each other. Pull together. Don't let your impatience with God or with the circumstances work out in impatience with each other. So we learn patience. Patience is not simply the ability to wait. It's how we behave while we're waiting. Take that spiritual road trip. Eating the marshmallow would be to criticize, to get edgy, to start grumbling against another person, to take a shot at them, to begin disunity. But to wait means, you know what, we're in this together. Each person is walking their own journey. Be kind. And then James goes on to talk about the prophets. James chapter 5, verse 10 says, "For examples of patience and suffering, dear brothers, look at the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord." I think of these prophets, and the one guy that comes to my mind right off the start is Jeremiah. Jeremiah was kind of known, as we learned about him in theology class, as the weeping prophet, because he always seemed to be crying. He was always crying about something. He was going through such a difficult time. But God raised up these prophets to live obediently and to call people to obedience, sometimes in very difficult times when people were making incredible compromises. And here was Jeremiah doing God's work, living obediently, calling people to obedience, speaking to the people of God. And in Jeremiah chapter 20, we find that he's put in stocks. Okay, so he's put in stocks. I don't know, they might have thrown tomatoes at him. I don't know what. But then in Jeremiah chapter 32, we find out that he's thrown in prison. And then in Jeremiah chapter 38, we find that he's thrown into a cistern, which is like a well. It's like where they stored water. And it says that when he went down to the bottom on these ropes, he just kind of like slid into this miry, clay, gross guck. And eventually he was pulled out. But Jeremiah was a guy who called people to follow God and towards obedience, but in the midst of it, still had things go wrong. Now, there's a very big truth about Christianity that sometimes is taken to an extreme. And I think that sometimes we don't recognize that following Jesus may not always make life easier. In fact, sometimes it may make it more difficult. Now, there are some things that are really helped and are really good about following Jesus. Because when you follow Jesus, some suffering gets to be avoided. Like some of the personal, you can just look at it. I mean, the cause and effect thing, you practice patience and purity, and you avoid an unwanted pregnancy. You use self-control and not tell off a fellow traveler, and you avoid the pain of broken relationship. You be honest and not cheat on taxes, and you avoid the suffering of imprisonment. You don't drink or smoke heavily, and you avoid the physical pain of heart and lung disease. Potentially. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule, but we look at those things and we go, if I'm living right, then it must be going right. It must go right. And conversely, oftentimes, especially in the Old Testament, they would look at it and go, if you're not doing well, then you must not be living right. And you're getting cursed by God somehow. We know that can't be true because Jeremiah and many of the prophets went through incredible difficult times for actually being faithful to God. And so James is pointing us out to that and saying, sometimes as you live in obedience, and as you take a stand sometimes that might be contrary to what is normative, you may suffer. You may go through difficult times. We sat on a tell, on a hillside in Israel over top of layers of rubble. And out in Israel, they build on top of each other all the way through. When a town gets destroyed or it falls apart, then they build on top of it. And there's all these layers of civilization. We were standing on top of it, and they actually walked us into a cistern, into a well where they would gather the water. And so you got a picture of what Jeremiah was being brought into and everything as he was going under his suffering. But it was very interesting. It was a hill that was overlooking the valley where Samson and that whole deal would have played out. But one of the things that the leader made a mention of is that you can kind of go through, they dig through them, and there's a lot of science to this. They find out the different levels of civilization that lived in that town at different times. And this would be specifically for the Israelites in Israel, in Judah. And in that, on that hill, they can actually go into the garbage of each of those civilizations and find out what they ate. There's an interesting thing that they started looking for. In some layers, they would find pig bones as garbage from what they'd been eating. And in some layers, they didn't. Now, if you study the Old Testament, you realize that God's command for the Israelites at that time was, as part of their purity and separateness from the rest of the societies, was to not eat pig, was not to eat pork. Now, obviously, we know that as Christ followers, and Cornelius demonstrates that the whole thing is that we're free, and all things are made for us to eat. But at that time, that was one of the significant demonstrations of obedience to God, is that not eating pork. And yet, at different layers with these Jewish societies, they would find pig bones. They could match up the pig bones with the circumstances that were happening at the different times of obedience. When they were disobedient, they were eating pig bones. When they were going through, oftentimes through difficult times of God's judgment, they were eating pig bones. When they were following God, they could see that, oh, okay, they're not eating pig pork anymore. A fascinating thing to look at for the Israelites at that time. For us today, whatever it is that God calls us to obedience, God says, I want you to know that to not eat the marshmallow, to live the truth, even when it's unpopular, or even when it's different than the rest of society, even when it might even cost you something, it's worth it. I want you to look at the prophets as examples of that. They were people who lived, and we honor them now because they lived in obedience to God. And then finally, he looks at Job, and he says, take a look at Job, verse 11. You know about Job, a man of great endurance. You can see how the Lord was kind to him at the end, for the Lord is full of tenderness and mercy. The book of Job is an interesting read. Sometimes it can get a little bit long for us as impatient Westerners who, you know, want to skip all that 38 chapters or so of stories, of soliloquies, of Job's friends telling him what's wrong with his life. But the circumstances are interesting. Job was a guy, he might be one of the most ancient of all the people written about in the Old Testament. And he talks about, in the first four chapters, about Job enjoying prosperity, enjoying how God, he's living righteously. He's a righteous man, it says. And God even says to Satan at the time, he says, have you seen my servant Job? He's living right. And Satan says, you know what? If he loses everything, he'll curse you. So the series of events happen. And Job's got his wealth, he's got herds, he's got flocks. And all at once, marauders come in, steal all his stuff. And then he's got this family, and they're great, great kids, adult kids. They've got, you know, they're married. They all happen to be in the same house at the same time. A windstorm comes up. Now, we know a little bit about that from yesterday. And blows over the building, and they all are killed. He is left with his wife, but she basically tells him, just curse God and die. You know, she's not a lot of help in the situation at the time. He gets boils from head to toe. He loses his health as well. And then you have a whole series from Job chapter 4 to Job 31 where Job is like, God, what's going on? And he's struggling with God. And his friends are coming to him saying, you must have done something wrong. And they accuse him. And they accuse him of being a sinner and a hypocrite. And they make all sorts of false accusations up against him. And Job goes, I don't know. But he says, he didn't say he was perfect, but he maintains his innocence. And in the midst of it, we see Job kind of walking with God, going through it with God, refusing to turn away. And he says, even if I die, I will hope in God. He remains hopeful. He says, nevertheless, I will argue my ways before him. He says, I'm going to struggle with God. And he recognizes that the most important thing through this difficulty is to keep in dialogue with God. I love how Lee Strobel and Peter Kreeft put it in one of their apologetics books. But they talk about the answer to suffering is not an answer at all. It's the answerer. It's Jesus himself. It's not a bunch of words. It is the word. It's not a tightly woven philosophical argument. It's a person. The person. The answer to suffering cannot be an abstract idea because it isn't an abstract issue. It's a personal issue. It requires a personal response. The answer must be someone, not just something, because the issue involves someone. It's that question, God, where are you? Job walks through that and he says, I'm going to stay with you, God. I'm going to stay in dialogue with you. And through that, we find God finally coming about this restoration of Job's health. He ends up with twice as much wealth. His family is returned to him. And we might say to him, why did he have to go through that all? There is a mystery of the divine purposes of God. There is a mystery to all of it. But we know that through it, what we do know for sure is that God showed himself to be strong. He showed himself to be sovereign. And Job became able to commit to God, to engage God in a much deeper and significant way. For Job, eating the marshmallow would have been curse God and die. Walk away from him. Not even curse him. Just say, you know what, God? I'm going to just go it alone. Leave God out. Quit the questions. Quit the struggle and just walk away. But he stayed there and he said, God, I'm going to stay here. And God always stays with us. As we keep looking for him, he will stay with us. Wally, do you mind handing out the next kind of treat that I have here? Forgive me, I'm not wanting to treat you like four-year-olds, but it is. Hopefully there's an illustration to this or a significant takeaway. It's worth it to wait on God. He is true. He is trustworthy. And many of you may have enjoyed campfires. We're not going to have a campfire. We don't have one outside. I think they're still banned, aren't they? Oh, they're not banned anymore? We could have had a campfire out there and all kind of roasted our s'mores afterwards. But what you'll have coming down the row is, and you're welcome to eat it now, is wafers. Understand this is not communion. I want to say that again. There is wafers and chocolate coming for you. And you know that marshmallow is a whole lot better with chocolate in it. God wants us to know that whatever it might be, really both in this life, in his presence being with us, and ultimately in his presence, Job says, don't get impatient. The return of the Lord will come. He will come and make all things new. He will come and put things back. And he said, in the midst of it, God saying to us, I will build your character. I will build into you. I will help your roots grow down deep into me so that you will become a stronger person, a person more in tune with who I am. And the way you're going to learn it sometimes is through difficulty, through hardship. The last verse here that I read, again, is a verse that might seem random and out of place. And James is quoting from Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, but he says, most of all, my brothers and sisters, never take an oath by heaven or earth or anything else. Just say a simple yes or no so that you will not be sinned and be condemned. Common practice in that day was to swear by heaven and earth, but it was really, you weren't really serious about it. It was like saying a lie but keeping your fingers crossed behind your back. It was that sort of thing. And James was saying, no, don't have that kind of character. He's saying, I want you to live life with integrity, with a strength about you, where your word is your bond, where you stick by your word. And as you go through adversity, as you go through difficulty, I will build that into you. One of the purposes of suffering is the building of character. A person who has true Christian character is a person who doesn't have to use a whole lot of words, but is a person who you know that that's who they are. That's what they're about. I want to close with one more backyard illustration beyond my tomato plants, and that's my backyard hedge. I took a couple of pictures of that as well. Okay, there's my backyard hedge along the fence. And you can see how some of my cedar trees are just dying. They aren't surviving the summer at all. And then there's my cedar hedge along the side fence. I think there's a picture for that. And I took these in the rain. And you can see it's just lush and vibrant. It's flourishing along the side of my yard. And I was trying to figure that out this summer. Why are my hedges dying on one fence and thriving on the other fence? And in my mind I was going, if anything, the hedge that's dying should be thriving. I mean, it's down the downward slope away from my house. It's gotten all the water that's been flowing towards it all this time. I even planted them a little bit closer together. They should be doing just fine on that side. It occurred to me later on, again, I'm no farmer, I'm not quick at this thing, but that in fact, the aspect of the bottom fence, if you want to throw that again up there again, being having so much water for so many summers, for the 10 years since I planted these things, is what has made them so susceptible to the drought that we've had this summer. They've never really learned to endure any kind of lack of water or suffering. They've always been pampered. You know, you'd think, well, it wouldn't make sense, but, you know, even the closeness together, maybe they'd be, well, you know that goes against each other. It's closer because it was easier to dig the holes in the first place and put them closer together on that one side than the other side. But oftentimes we think, you know, if I just have the warmth of everybody around me being just right towards me, no grumbling, I'm close. God feels close. Job went all that time, we don't know how long, where God just seems so distant and far. But through that, he learned endurance. He learned to trust God, and he saw God in a whole new way, working in and above even the mystery of what we can see here and working in divine mysteries. As we go through times of struggle or challenge, we know that God is actually working something. Our lives get deeper. Our roots grow deeper into God. We, in fact, learn how to sustain within the very difficult things that can come into our lives. How to remain firm with hope and with joy. Let's pray. God, I just pray that you would continue to work in our lives. Like the farmer, I pray that you would just teach us that there is a harvest. That when we do not give up, we will reap a harvest at the proper time. And we may even be reaping a harvest in our lives, even as we go about our life. Living out the love that you call us to, sometimes in the face of very difficult circumstances in our relationships. Lord, help us to be like the farmer. And God, I pray that you would also help us to look at the prophets and the honor that you give them, Lord. People who stood up in obedience, even as culture and people were going away from you, Lord. They took a tough stance and they lived and spoke the truth. I pray that we will learn from that too, Lord. That we will endure some of the hardship that may come as a result of standing for truth. And Lord, I pray too that you would encourage us through the story of Job, Lord. That we, like Job, will come to that place where we would just say, God, you are far above us. You are beyond us. And there are mysteries that we will not know. But we know, God, as James reaffirms here, that you are a kind God. And you are compassionate and merciful. We thank you for that. Amen.